Hey everyone, the Tessel 2 by the Tessel Group is a new device that lets you run your IoT apps using Node.js. So it's really easy, and it's easy to get started. I'm going to show you how right now. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to make the obligatory Blinky app as well as Blinky Plus, and then we're going to have a pretty cursory look at the API that Tessel gives you to make your own IoT projects. I'm Jeremy Foster, and you're watching The Maker Show. Now, what I'm going to show you today is, first of all, some philosophy stuff, some high level, what Tessel's all about and blah, blah, blah. And then we're going to look at what it looks to take your Tessel out of the box and get started the very first time. And then there's the obligatory Blinky app. You can't do an introduction to an IoT device without making a little light blink. But we've also got Blinky Plus, so I wanted to take Blinky to a little bit higher level. But then after Blinky, you want to figure out, you know, what is this really going to look like to access all the pins and talk to this, the buses and the ports and the analog and the digital and all that stuff. So I'll give you the skinny on the API. So first of all, the philosophy stuff. I'm glad to say that Tessel's philosophy looks like it's pretty much in alignment with myself and the community as I know it. They want to create an open source platform, not only open source software, but open source hardware as well. So the Tessel is all conformant to open hardware specs, and that's encouraging. I don't know all the details of what those open hardware specs involve and everything, but I'm really glad to know that they're in this direction anyway. They obviously want to make it easy and intuitive for people to develop IoT devices. It says that all their decisions are steered by open governance, and that includes the community, and the goal is to create freely licensed designs and tools. That's all great. I love that. Finally, their core philosophies of the Tessel Group is to have an absolute priority on developer experience, which is really good. If a developer is not going to know, love, and use the platform and the services, then it's not going to land. Now, the device design should focus on user experience rather than implementation. Good, that's great. That's the way it should be. They subscribe to the philosophy that openness promotes innovation, and I would happen to agree. Also, that Tessel should be practical to use. Yeah, it should be practical to use. In other words, it shouldn't just be a good design experience, but the thing that you create should actually have real-world value. And finally, they would say that community matters, and I would agree. It does matter to have communication platforms and processes in place that make sure that the developer community can contact each other, can submit questions and submit answers, and can go for help and all of that. The community matters. It really does. That's going to be a huge part of any ecosystem. Now let's look at the specs. This is the Tessel device, what it looks like for the most part. We're looking at a 580 megahertz processor with 64 megs of RAM, and then a 48 megahertz Atmel coprocessor. Now, the specs on this, as you can tell, are not gigantic. I don't think they need to be in most cases. I've never run into any of these limitations because most of the IoT stuff that I'm working with is doing really simple internet calls. It's turning on and off GPIO pins. It's sending pretty simple streams of data across buses. And none of that's really rocket science. And so, it's easy to say, well, my IoT device is faster than yours. And it really oftentimes, it doesn't matter so much. And in this case, I think these specs are really sufficient for almost for any of the IoT applications that I've worked with. Now, if you want to start rendering video and stuff like that on the client side on your device for some reason, then maybe you need to get a Dragon board or something like that. But for most cases, like I said, I think the Tessel's just fine. You do on board on the Tessel have Wi-Fi. That's important. Wi-Fi and Ethernet. You also have two USB ports and a micro USB port for charging the thing. And you have two, what they call, module ports. Now that's different than the Raspberry Pi, the Arduino, all of the devices that I've seen so far. And this is kind of interesting. Basically what this is, it's still an array of pins, and it still gives you the ability to just kind of choose a pin and say, I want it to go high or go low. But the way that they're arranged, they're also completely ready to receive Tessel modules, and we'll talk about more of that in just a little bit. So I really like the way that these two module ports work. And then the price point. This is about a $45 device. The modules themselves are usually either 25 or 50, depending on the complexity of the module. So this is another one of those affordable devices. This isn't a $180 device or something that you're going to really have to think and justify before you get it. This might be the kind, depending on your situation, where you can just say, you know what, I may as well get one of those so I can play with it. So that's great. Now, the developer workflow is, in my opinion, one of the great things about the TESOL. It really is easy to install, easy to deploy, easy to set your app as the startup app and reset and reboot and update and all that stuff. Where if you're working on a regular system on a chip running Linux, it can be difficult. It can be difficult to create your systemd services and configure them to boot load up when the application, when the operating system boots. That all can be rather difficult. Plus, when something goes awry and you've got to do a reimage, you know, that stuff all takes time. And the TESOL attempts, and in my opinion, does a really good job of doing away with a lot of that stuff. Now, the TESOL runs Node.js. This isn't something where you're going to go in and, you know, use some custom C or by any means, you're not going to be creating Windows apps on it or anything like that. This is a device that specializes in running Node.js. Now, that said, they do also support Python and Rust. I think that Rust is kind of early. Python, I'm not real aware of the depth of the support for Python, but if you're interested in those modern scripting languages, you might want to steer this way as well. The TESOL modules and USB modules are really easy. If you've got a TESOL module, it's a matter of plugging it in and then adding another NPM package. It's extremely easy. And one of the cool things about the workflow is that once you set up your device and teach it what your Wi-Fi is, which is one line of code, one line at the command line rather, it doesn't have to be anywhere near your PC. You just have it chatting with the same Wi-Fi network, and then you can do all your management and deployment and everything over Wi-Fi. You can do it over USB as well, but Wi-Fi is great. Okay, so let's look at this out-of-the-box experience. What happens when you actually pull the device out of the box? So first of all, I created this 9-step thing. I basically just followed the URL that you see in step one, so don't feel like you have to just follow my 9 steps. But this is kind of a distillation of all the documentation that you find on that link, okay? So after opening that up to kind of act as your reference, step two, install the TESOL command line utility. Now you do have to make sure you have Node and NPM installed for this step, but do an npm I, and by the way, I is a shortcut for install. You don't have to waste your keystrokes typing nstall anymore. Npm I dash g, that means global. I'm going to use this module everywhere. I don't want it to just be installed in the directory that I'm currently in and usable here. I want it to be usable everywhere. And that's the case with T2. You want to be able to use it regardless of which directory you're in. So npm install dash g T2-CLI. Now T2-CLI is the name of the package, but after you install that package, you now have a command available to you, and the command is T2. Okay, so now you plug your TESOL in via USB. That's the one time that you have to plug it in by way of USB, because of course it doesn't even know your Wi-Fi yet out of the box. So then you find your TESOL, T2 list, simple. And then you give it a name, T2 rename Trump. Whatever you want to call it, you can call it something else if you want to. Then teach it your Wi-Fi. So it's going to be really important to give it your Wi-Fi credentials. So T2 Wi-Fi dash N, here's the SSID or Wi-Fi network name, Smith Residence, dash P, that's the password, here's the super secret password, super secret 123. Okay, now you need to get authorized to run and push code. And that's when you do T2 provision. Now, what this is doing behind the scenes for you is it's setting up an SSH key on the machine, on your host machine, and on the TESOL. And it's once that's set up, now you're going to be able to log in to the TESOL without any credentials. So that's really convenient. You can SSH, for instance, to it without any credentials. Now you do an update of the TESOL, since between the time that it shipped to you and the time that you got around to pulling it out of the box and getting started with IoT, there may have been some updates. So T2 update, nice and easy, it'll run that on its own. And then finally, it's time for you to use it. So you write a project and you T2 run my cool code. Don't do that yet, because we're going to teach you how to use a really basic Blinky app, and we're going to kind of do the easy button method and then the longer method, so that for the sake of your understanding. All right. Now, the Tessel CLI, this is an NPM module that I had you install on the last step. This allows you to control your Tessel. I showed you most of these commands already. I showed you list, and I showed you update and provision and rename and run. I'm going to show you real quick the ones that I didn't mention before. You can do a T2 version, and that will tell you the version of the operating system currently running on your Tessel. You can also do a push, which is different from a run. Now, when you do a T2 run, that sends the right code to the Tessel where it goes into memory and it runs. But it doesn't save it anywhere. It doesn't keep it around. It just runs it. That's it. Okay. So your Tessel is kind of your deploy target. Okay. It's really, really great to just be able to do T2 run my code, and it just runs on the Tessel. So if you've got a robot, you can actually see the robot move. Now, push results in your code running, but it also sends the code to the device and puts it in a special directory so that whenever you turn off your Tessel and turn it back on, it's going to boot and it's going to run that project alone. Okay? So whenever you're kind of finished and you've got the robot, if you unplug it from the wall and you plug it back in, you want it to wake up and start acting like a robot, right? That's why you want your code to run. You can T2 erase and get your code off of it. And you can also, besides just doing T2 Wi-Fi, you can also set the Tessel up as an access point. So I won't go into that in this introductory lesson, but being able to configure it as an access point is pretty cool for a variety of reasons. Okay, and now for the obligatory blinking app. The blinking app is really easy on the Tessel, and that's because it gives you this command called init. Notice step 1 and 2 here are make a directory and then change into it. Those are hardly complex or difficult steps. So really, let's just jump into number 3, initialize the project T2 init. T2 init is going to create the project for you. Now we're going to jump out to my console here. And now I want to go to a temp directory, and let's just go to temp junk. And this is where I keep kind of all my stuff that I don't need to be around. And let's go ahead and make a new folder called Tessel Blinky. There we go. It exists now. Now let's go into Tessel Blinky and let's do a T2 init. Now, because I have the T2 command, any T2 commands I can run from anywhere I'm at. So here I am in temp junk Tessel Blinky, and I can do a T2 init. It's going to generate some files here, and you're going to see exactly what files it created. So it said it wrote the hello world. Let's do a list. It wrote us a Tessel include, an index.js, and a package.json. Now I'm going to open this in Visual Studio Code. That'll give us the ability to kind of look at all of the files very easily and see what they include. Now the Tessel include is, I don't know the specifics of that, but it does tell you right here that this is for T2 to make it better at bundling and so on, and it just kind of handles this for you so you don't have to worry about it. I'll jump down to the package JSON. It did go ahead and give it a name and a description. Version 0 says that index.js is the entry point. That's that file there. And besides that being the entry point, we also have specified a GitHub repository that this lives at. This is not very accurate because this is the repository of the T2 CLI. So certainly if you're going to create something, put it in GitHub, go ahead and fill that out. Some keywords. It's nice to have the keyword Tessel, because then when people search on NPM for the word Tessel, they come up with your project. And then what license you want to use, and a bit of a README. Just a general package JSON. But I want you to note about this package JSON file, there are no dependencies in here. That's interesting. You'd think, well, surely there's got to be some dependencies on some Tessel libraries and stuff. In fact, here I am now in the index.json, and if you know anything about Node, you know that we can have one-to-many requires in here, and this pulls in other code, and we're requiring Tessel. And how is it actually getting this Tessel? Well, this gets handled for you. When this goes to the device, it knows that you're going to have this dependency on Tessel. You need that dependency on the Tessel module. And so they made it implicit. You don't have to include that in your package JSON as a dependency. You don't have to NPM install it. none of that stuff. Now look at Blinky. Here's Blinky. This is really easy. This is saying, okay, bring in Tessel. That's now called Tessel. Now of the array of LEDs that Tessel has, so it's got some onboard LEDs. It's got four of them. And it's saying, go to the third one, number to index number two, and turn it on. And it's that easy. I just turned on an onboard LED. And now it says, let's go ahead and set an interval of 100 milliseconds. So this code is going to run every 100 milliseconds. So every 100 milliseconds, it's going to toggle LEDs 2 and 3, where 2 starts on and 3 starts off. So these lights are going to alternate. All right, now let's jump over here to the command line and let's do a T2 run. And then that was called index.js. Now, as I mentioned before, the run is going to load this into the memory of the Tessel, not actually put the files in the storage system on the Tessel. But you can see the process here as it locates the Tessel, connects to the Tessel, builds the project, deploys it, and then finally it runs that project and says, hey, here I am, I'm blinking. And you can see on my Tessel here that I've actually got these lights alternating exactly like I expected. Now, the thing I want you to notice is that the console is passed back to me as a host computer. And so if I want to console log stuff out, it happens on the device, but I get the standard out. So I get to see what's happening right here on my command line where I actually ran it. Okay, now that's Blinky, and that's really simple. But what I want to do is I want to walk you through the process so that you don't feel like that was just kind of some smoke and mirrors, okay? So let's do that same thing, but let's write it ourselves. And this will not be difficult at all. Let's jump back down to the command line, get out of that Tessel Blinky folder, and now let's make a folder called Tessel Code. So let's go ahead and do a make dir Tessel Code. There we go. We'll cd into that, and then we'll do an npm init. Now this is different from the T2 init because the T2 init sets things up the Tessel way. If I just do an npm init, and I'm going to do a dash y because that takes all the defaults, what that does is it creates me a package.json file. So if I do ls, you can see I now have a package.json file. Great. Now I want to create myself a JavaScript file, and we'll call this blinky.js. Now I have a blinky.js and a package.json file. This looks like it's ready to jump into Visual Studio Code. Now I've got package.json, there it is, and I've got blinky.js, which currently does not contain anything. So let's go on to the next step, which is to write our code. So we need to require Tessel. Let's do a var Tessel equals require Tessel. Nice and easy. Now let's do a var orange equals the Tessel LEDs number one. That's the second LED, okay? This is on the board and it's an orange LED. That's why we called it orange. So Tessel LEDs one. Now orange should equal that. Now we're going to do a set interval. And the function that I want to run is to do an orange toggle. Orange toggle. And then the duration that I want for this is, say, 100 milliseconds. Terminate that with a semicolon, and there we are. Step three, we run the code. So now I'm going to close Visual Studio Code, jump back out to my command line, and you can see that my blinky.js now has some length. So now let's do a T2 run blinky.js. And look at what this does. We're looking for the Tessel, connecting to it, building the project, writing this to the RAM because I did a run, it's deployed and now it's running Blinky.js. And now I'm looking at my Tessel board here and I can see this orange light flashing at a frequency of 100 milliseconds exactly as I would expect. A couple of control C's and that kills it. And now let's have a little bit of fun. Let's jump back to my code here and I've got a project called Blinky Plus. Blinky Plus is already built and everything, so let's just go ahead and open that up in Visual Studio Code. There it is. Now with Blinky Plus, I once again do not have any dependencies. And if you look at Blinky, it's still very short, but let's just look at what's happening here. We have a LEDs equals require Tessel LEDs. Now I'm doing a little something tricky here. I'm doing my require as I must, but I'm not storing that. If I only use it once, then sometimes I'll do it this way where I just kind of branch right off of it and get the LEDs collection. It still includes this third-party code because I'm doing the require, but it's jumping right into the LEDs collection of the result of that call and storing it as LEDs, which I am using throughout my interval function there. Okay, now let's create a variable called C, started at 0, C standing for current, and then D standing for direction, and let's start it out going in the negative direction. This is going to bounce between negative 1 and positive 1. So now let's do a set interval at 100 milliseconds, and what do we want to do in here? Let's loop through all of the LEDs on the board. Remember I said there were 4 of them, and let's turn them off. Okay, turn off all the LEDs. And now I want you to go find the current LED, which starts at 0, and I want you to turn that one on. So this is going to turn on the first LED initially. And now it says if we're dealing with LED number 0 or the very last LED, then I want you to switch the directions. Essentially, I want you to bounce off the end. Now, bouncing off the end just takes the negation of the direction and sets it as D, so that now when we add D to C, it's either going to plus 1 or minus 1. So essentially what we have here is kind of the old Knight Rider kit style lights that pan back and forth, but it doesn't do justice. I just need to show it to you. So let's do a T2, run, blinky.js, and here we go. And there you can actually see the lights panning back and forth. See, we've got a couple of red light and orange and yellow and a blue light, and we're going back and forth quite rapidly. So now let me give you the skinny on the API, the TESL 2 API. First, you've seen me use the TESL module. You do have to do a TESL required TESL at the beginning of every code file, okay? You need that. Now, if you're gonna use a TESL module, it's going to be quite easy. It really is. Let's say you want to use the accelerometer. This is a device that you get from the store at TESL.io. When you're ready to use that, you simply drop to your command line in your project and you do an npm install excel-mma84-save. That puts it in your package JSON file. Once you've done that, then in your code, you're then able to say var excel equals require excel mma84. And then you tack onto that .use and you give it a TESL port using the syntax. So you've got 2 ports on your device. If you get an accelerometer and you plug it into A, then this is all you need to do to use that accelerometer. That's phenomenal. That's far easier than most of the IoT devices and scenarios that I've run into. Now, if you want to read the digital pin, which is something that you're very likely to do very shortly after plugging this thing in, you want to read, for instance, the value of a sensor, or you want to read whether or not a button's been pressed or whatever. Once again, start with your TESL required TESL, and then you can say, give me this pin, pin 2 of port A. Now notice, port A is a whole collection of pins, but you can grab any one of those pins, such as pin 2, and just say, I just want to use that one pin, and that's how you do it. Now you can turn that pin high by saying output 1, and then you can read that pin and say, I want to console log the value of that pin, and then I want to turn the pin low. Okay, so that's how you control it. It's how you turn it on, turn it off, and read the value of it. Notice that when you read the value, what you're actually doing is you're saying read, and then you're passing a callback function so that if it takes a little bit of time, and we're talking milliseconds still, but if it takes a little bit of time for it to read that pin, then it's going to come back immediately from the pin read function and it's going to call your callback. That's asynchronous code and it's a really good idea. Now let's say we want to read an analog pin. Require TESL, we pull in port B pin 7, and we say I want to do an analog write to that pin. And I want to write 0.6, 60% of high. Now analog pins are able to go anywhere from 0 to 100% of the voltage value, and so it's really slick to just be able to say analog write 0.6. You can also analog read, and the value that it gives you then is going to be 0.6. It's going to give you that value that's been set. So really easy to read and write analog pins. What about if we want to read a pin and we don't want to use an interrupt? And I'm going to tell you what an interrupt here is in just a second. This is the kind of code that you write whenever you want to do that. And this is how you normally do it on most other devices that I've seen. You set up a polling interval. In this case, it's a really fast interval of 10 milliseconds. And then every 10 milliseconds, you read that pin. What's your value? What's your value? What's your value? Are you on yet? Are you on yet? And this is not an ideal way to do it. It's really great when you can get some sort of an interrupt, which is like an event that fires, and you can not do anything until that event fires. So take a little mental snapshot of this code and kind of the garbage that it is for having to do all of this long polling, unfortunately. And now let's look at what it looks like when you are using an interrupt. So you just get a reference to that pin, and then you can say green off. Okay, so that pin is now off. And then you can say pin on rise. And that's excellent because you're just setting up an event and saying, whenever you go high, I want to know about it. And there's no other code to write. You just send it a quick callback and say, this is the stuff I want to do whenever that pin goes high. Pretty great. Now there are some commands that some functions that you can use to handle these events. One is called on. And one is called once. So obviously on is going to happen whenever that event occurs, but then once is only going to happen the first time it occurs. So maybe you want to find out when it rises for the very first time, but then you don't want that event to be handled anymore. Now the valid values in here for event name are rise, fall, change high, or low. Okay? You can imagine what each of those are. Now, like any good IoT device, the Tessel gives you the ability to address your pins using pulse width modulation. Pulse width modulation is really cool. I remember learning this in school a really long time ago. And essentially what it is it's using a duty cycle. The duty cycle is the amount of time that the pin is high versus the amount of time that the pin is low. So if you were to look at an oscilloscope showing you a square wave of the value of the pin, you know, digital pins are usually either low or high, zero or one. But if you want to make it basically kind of half power, you could give it a duty cycle 50%. And that means that it's going to generate a square wave that is on or high half the time and down or low the other half of the time. And that's what pulse width modulation is. And you can do that on the Tessel very easily. You just grab one of the ports, grab one of the pins, and then you set the PWM frequency to whatever you want. And you can also set the duty cycle. So those make it nice and easy to use PWM on your Tessel. Now the I2C bus is totally there and ready for you. All you do is you choose what the slave address is, and then you create this I2C port using that slave address, and you're ready to start transferring on the I2C bus. Really easy to transfer raw values directly to the bus, and also easy to handle the messages that are coming back. There are a lot of popular devices that use an I2C bus. Basically, anytime a sensor gets complicated enough that it can't really send its values easily on analog and digital pins, they start using a bus where they're sending the values across the bus one value at a time. And that's ready for you. Onboard LEDs. I told you we've got a few of these. You can access tessel.led. Tessel.led is an array of the available LEDs. And then you can access number 0, 1, 2, or 3. And those are red, amber, green, and blue, respectively. With those LEDs, you get on, off, toggle, and you can ask, is it on or off? That's a Boolean that lets you know whether it's on or off right now. So that's helpful. You might choose to use your own LEDs on a board, but you might want to use the onboard LEDs as well to make things nice and easy, and it's great that there's more than one. The network API on the Tessel is pretty robust in my experience. Most of them fall under the namespace Tessel.network. Tessel.network.Wi-Fi that's all of the commands that are accessing the Wi-Fi capabilities of the board that is communicating on an existing access point or SSID. And so you can get the connection that's currently active, disable it, enable it, find all the available networks, that's a scan. You can reset it, that's nice. If anything goes wrong with the connection, you can just try a Wi-Fi reset and see if that helps it. You can do that dynamically in your code. You can also test and see if it's connected, and This is extremely handy because you can just say, hey, am I connected? And if not, I need to give the user an error saying this only works if we're connected to the internet. Or maybe I could ask if I'm connected and figure out whether I want to start caching my data and saving it for the next time that I am connected. And then I can say on connect. So that's perfect for the scenarios where I'm not connected all the time, because when I get disconnected, I can start caching data. But then as soon as I get connected again, I can start sending all of my cached data back up to the internet, to my database, and getting in sync again. So really good handling of the Wi-Fi network here. There's also, however, the ability to create access points. Now this gives your Tesla the ability to be an access point. That means that other Wi-Fi devices are going to be able to connect to it. So you can create an access point, disable, enable, reset it, and you can also respond to these various events of an access point. Check out Tesla's documentation for more in-depth information about that and some examples of how to use it. So there you have it. That's what I know so far about the Tesla, although I am still playing with this device. It's a lot of fun. So if this is the kind of code that you like to write and the kind of projects that you like to do, go ahead and get yourself a Tesla and let me know how this goes for you. As always, we would love to hear about the projects that you're making. Why don't you go ahead and include @TheMakerShow in a tweet and just tell us about your project, and we'll try to tell the world about it. Have fun with this stuff.